Hello, welcome to episode 10 from Stories from the VO Booth. I'm your host, voiceover trainer and talent, Tina Zaremba. Today we're talking with my friend and fellow VO talent and producer, Mike Bratton, where he shares about the building of his career from a successful imaging director to voiceovers and also producing niche demos. You're in for a treat. Hello, Mike Bratton.
Hello, Tina. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
Anytime.
All right. So I want to start off by asking you, how the heck did you get into voiceovers?
It's probably a longer story than anybody really wants to hear, but I'll try and give you the short of it.
The Cliff Note version?
Yeah. Thank you. I got into doing voiceover by way of radio. I got into radio production in college, and I worked in radio for about 15 years, give or take.
Did you at the radio station?
I was the imaging director. It's the radio way of saying a creative services director. So, you know, if you're working with like a promo department at a network like I work with, or even commercials or narration projects that you would work with a particular agency or production house, they would have their own creative services director who sort of oversees the writing and the hiring of voices and all that kind of stuff. That's what I used to do at radio stations for 15 plus years. I had the benefit of starting in radio right when alternative radio kicked off. And I had that sort of like non-traditional, you know, voiceover thing. And also I kind of had a decent sense of humor and I was completely sarcastic. And that's what alternative radio wanted. So I got to write for myself and voice everything myself. So I got to just play every day.
So as the image director, you were also the voiceover talent for some of these radio stations?
For the most part, yeah. Usually we had like one, you know, like bigger VOG, like voice of God kind of thing. And then there was usually me, you know, I would do the promos, like the longer form things like, you know, this coming up this weekend, we've got blah, 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 you know, that kind of stuff. And then we usually had like a bigger voice. It would be like, you know, the buzz in between the little things that would play, the sweepers and stuff that would play in between songs. I eventually got to do the actual sounders and sweepers and little identifications for other stations. And that's how I kind of got my start in voiceover, was working at a station. And then somebody would hear the work I was doing and be like, you know, from Champaign, Illinois, hey, we have this radio station in Champaign. We're alternative. We like what you do. Can you voice and produce for us? Sure. And then I started doing that for a handful of stations. And then people started asking me to just voice their stuff because they already had a production person. And so, yeah, I just got to play a lot.
So two questions for you here. One, were you paid for the talent rate in addition to getting your salary as an image director?
Yes. Yeah. I got paid on the side to do, you know, all these other radio stations and things like that. And that's how I started making more money on the side. And that was when at that point in time, all I thought there was, like, I heard voices on commercials and on TV promos and trailers and stuff, but I didn't think that was a thing you could do. Like, I thought those were just the same 10 or 15 people for the most part at that time they were. And, you know, I was just kind of like, well, you can't get into that. That's not a thing that people do for a living. And then I hooked up with an agency and I was like, oh my God, that is the thing that you can do for a living. That's like, once you get in with an agency, these are the opportunities that start heading your way, hopefully.
So I know you voice a fair number of promos. Did you make a conscious choice to focus on promos?
I did to a certain extent. When I got in, like I said, you know, I was doing the radio imaging stuff and all I really thought of was radio. I'm going to do all these radio stations. And then that started to happen. But then I started to, like, then there was more competition and it was very difficult. And I thought, well, what else can I do? And then since I had hooked up with an agency, I was seeing other opportunities. And being that I was in Chicago at the time, I was like, hey, I need to get a commercial agent locally. So I did. And then I started booking some commercial stuff. And then I was like, you know, oh, I want to do this and I want to do that. And I want to do this and I want to do that. Like, I had just overwhelmed myself with too many things that I wanted to try and be good at. And, you know, the reality is you can be very good at a whole bunch of different things, but you need to cultivate a voice for yourself somehow or another. And I had already cultivated this radio voice, this thing that I was doing in radio, but it didn't translate to other, you know, media. It didn't translate well to TV because everything I did in radio was very affected and fake. It was all like, you know, we talked about, it was like this. everything was really quiet and dark. And it sounded cool on radio, but when you try and do that for, you know, today at McDonald's, it doesn't sound right, you know?
Right.
And so I had to kind of relearn how to be myself, and I was uncomfortable without like the crutches of radio sound effects and EQs and filters and compression and all this crap. And I didn't like the way that I sounded. So I kind of had to learn how to accept my own voice without all that other stuff, and realize that, you know, I had something to offer, but I wasn't sure where it fit. But I had the luxury of having a day job where all I did all day was write, voice, and produce promos for a radio station, and then could just, so I was sitting by a microphone at a computer all day. So as the auditions came in, or I could just practice and practice and practice. And that's how I wound up kind of cultivating a thing for myself in promo specifically.
So do you think talent should focus a specific area within voiceovers, and why?
Yeah. If you want to, like, I'm very lucky now in that I have a nice stable of steady monthly and in some cases weekly income. But that's great now because this is all I do. I have no other skills to offer. For the longest time, I just focused on promo for the longest because I felt like that was the area that I was going to make my bones. And I was right. But as time has gone on, I've become more well-rounded in everything because you can't just, while you need to have a focus in order to really get yourself moving, once you get moving, you have to stay moving.
I want to ask you, you mentioned a few minutes ago when you started doing promos, the big thing was the Gen X, the Gen Y sound. So that was kind of a trend, a flavor of the month, if you will, that was big then. Do you hear a particular sound? Not that I encourage people to play to a sound, but a certain style that's really hot right now within promos?
I don't know that I can pinpoint what a promo voice sounds like at the moment. I can tell you what all of the specs, almost to the letter, say.
Conversational, real.
Conversational, natural, real, blah, blah, blah. And then you go and you see the promo, whoever booked it or whatever, and you go, that doesn't sound real or natural or anything. Yeah, I worked on this with my coach for a long time. You have to take the instructions or the spec, you know, on the spot that you're seeing what they're asking for. Mm-hmm. You have to be a detective. You have to dig into the head of the person that's writing the spot. The language that they use will tell you what they really are looking for. You have to get into the head of the person who wrote the spot, not necessarily the producer of the spot, but the person who wrote it, because the writer isn't always the one who is also producing the spot. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the writer isn't even the one who's casting the spot. You kind of have to be, the you know, taking the words of the writer and turning those into your own language. But when they say things like, you know, natural, normal, guy next door, girl next door, conversational, what they're saying is they don't want this voice. That sounds like a couple of people that might buy our product would be talking to each other. Not necessarily that you need to sound like, you know, hey man, how's it going? Because when you're in a promo situation, promos are by definition promotional. You're promoting something. You can't be, hey man, come check out our show tonight at 10 on NBC. You can't do that. You can't be asleep at the wheel. But that's how a lot of people talk. So, you know, you have to speak energetically, but you have to do it in a way that doesn't sound like you're speaking energetically, you know, like it's really this weird mind game that you have to play with yourself.
Yeah, yeah. But it's almost like contained excitement is what I'm thinking.
Yeah. For the most part. I mean, again, there's so subjective, like everything about those types of directions is so subjective. You just have to go with what your gut says is conversational. You know, it's like do a take that's just like super laid back and exactly how you would talk to somebody, and then do another one that's a little more pushy promo. And then once you get it, then it's just kind of like, okay, whatever I did, they liked, I guess. And so then if you're lucky, you work with the producer who's like, yeah, you know what? We heard something in your audition that sounded great. What you read totally doesn't work for what we're doing, but we like you. We liked your vibe, or something about you said we can work with this guy or gal. And you know, here we go.
Yeah. So many spots I've auditioned for, the actual session comes out sounding completely different than the audition.
And that's why when you read the specs, like conversational, blah, 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 blah. And then you hear the spot that runs on the air and you're like, that doesn't sound conversational at all. Well, it doesn't sound conversational to you. But what they did was they found somebody, the person that they heard had a definitive idea in their head when they read the script, and probably, like my coach also often told me to do, ignored the spec or the boilerplate language of, you know, conversational person next door, you know, someone you want to have a beer with description, and just read it like themselves based on the words that they saw and not the description. The words of the writer are more important than the spec from the producer.
Yeah. So listen, in addition to being the king bee, if you will, in promos and whatnot within the voiceover world, I know that you also produce, I call them niche demos, but you call them elevator pitch demos. And I want to talk a little bit about that and hear more as to what that is and how they're different than the regular demo someone would have produced.
Well, the idea behind it is this, and you know, and really this is pretty, like, you know, whoever's listening to this right now, this is pretty fledgling, brand new information. Like, if you tried to look this up, you're not going to find it just yet. I still have to, you know, but the idea is this, and this is stuff that people have done for decades. You pitch, you want to pitch somebody, you know, so, you know, the idea is like, okay, I have this network, or I have this client, or there's a company that I really like and admire, and I would really like to work for them or with them, or I think I can do something completely different for them than what they already hear. How can I pitch them? Well, I can use a whole bunch of words and flowery language, and I can send them, you know, send their creative services director chocolates, or I can, you know, tweet till the cows come home about how much I love their product and everything. But how are they going to know what you can do for them unless you do for them? And so a lot of talent that I know, myself included, like when I do radio station imaging auditions, I not only send them a dry voice track, I'll also send a voice track with like what I could hear as the sound of the station. And then I'll sit down with some of my like sound effects and music beds and things like that and produce 20 or 30 seconds worth of imaging for that station. Here's what a theoretical package of my stuff could sound like if you hire me as your voice. This springs forth from that idea. It's easier to pitch to like a TV station or a TV network or a radio station because it's very specific. They already have a formula and a production package, you know, and stuff. So you can kind of like take some scripts from them and then just voice it and produce it and all that kind of stuff. But that also entails you having the knowledge to how to produce a decent sounding TV promo or a good sounding commercial or a good sounding radio promo or something like that. And that's where I step in, is I know how to do all that stuff. And I have talked to other talent like yourself who have wanted to pitch a specific buyer.
Last year, my sister, who is a producer for a network, said to me, "Can you send me over some of your work because we're considering a new voice?" Great. Mm-hmm. Send my promo demo to her. And she's like, "Do you have anything though that just sounds like appropriate for our network?" And I realized my promo demo is not going to fly anymore. I need to have bite-sized demos that are 30 seconds to give to particular producers, networks, to show how I can shine in their lane, if you will.
Right, right. But a buyer doesn't want to always listen to 60 seconds that doesn't pertain to them. You know, it's like they're looking for that one bit, that one piece.
Yeah, you know, and as we're talking, I was just thinking on my demo, on my commercial demo, and it's usually healthcare and pharmaceutical companies will say to me, they'll point to a specific spot on my demo which makes me think, why don't I have a pharma commercial demo? Like that would just duh, be so obvious. So that's something else I need to work with you on.
Yeah, well, we can talk about that afterwards.
Yes, we will. So how do people learn more about you? And if they want to talk to you about these elevator pitch demos and find out more about it.
But if you're listening to this, you can contact me at voiceguybratton@gmail.com. And then if you want to check out my website, it is mikebrattonvoice.com.
Beautiful. Well, I'm excited that we're able to share it first here. And I thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today, Mr. Bratton.
Absolutely. You too. Thank you very much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Stay tuned next week for episode 11, where I'm talking with one of my students and current voice of ADT, Mr. Michael Schwengel. And a reminder, you're invited to take part in my free 5-day VO challenge. Go to tinazaremba.com/challenge to learn more and sign up. Until next time, here's to owning our voices. Stories from the VO Booth is produced at Lotus Productions in New York. Special thanks to producer and editor, Sam Ufret.